I have a most interesting subject to discuss with you this morning. This is the Senior Minister of our Lord and Savior.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Fundamentalists Podcast. My name is Elliot Morgan. I am a egomaniacal, narcissistic, psychotic, obsessive, reclusive hermit. And I am joined by a pillar of health, both physical and mental, Dr. Peter Rollins.
That's right. Thank you, sir. A pillar of physical and mental health.
You're a chiseled Greek god, honor to live with you.
If you hadn't said the physical, I could have believed you. Now I know you're being ironic, yeah. Because we both know how unfit and unhealthy I am.
But I like the fact that that implies that you do believe you're a chiseled Greek god of mental health.
Yes. That's called denial.
I know you're not. I've seen it firsthand. So today, the subject that we're diving into, and if you're just joining us for the first time, this is a podcast where I, as a comedian, somebody who attempts to be a comedian, join forces with Pete, who's a philosopher and a writer.
Who attempts to be a philosopher.
Attempts to be a philosopher, yep. Yeah. A lot of try-harding happening here. And we try to figure out how to live life well, and we cover different subjects and different weird things. We have fun titles. And if you like the podcast, always feel free to tell a friend about it. And for those who have shared it on social media, we see all of it, and thank you so much for all of the nice things that you say. A few people have asked about subjects, like to suggest or whatever for us to talk about. Always feel free to just tweet at us. I am at Elliot C. Morgan, and Pete is at Peter Rollins. Is that all of the housekeeping?
I think so.
Where are you going after this before we dive into all this stuff? Because you're about to leave. You're about to rush out.
I'm about to rush out, although by the time people listen to this, I'll be back. That is the nature of recording. Nice. But I'm going up to California and then back to Northern Ireland.
Oh, so you're gonna so you're going to California, and then from there you're going to Ireland.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Yep.
Northern Ireland. Which is the real Ireland, not Southern Ireland.
Well, although technically the real Ireland is Southern Ireland.
It's good that it's very big of you to
to admit that.
Yeah. I don't know anything about like whatever that beef is, because I'm an American and I can't be concerned with what happens outside of this country, let alone, well, outside of my life in general. But okay, cool. Yep. So you're traveling, and so what are you doing in California, and then what are you doing in Belfast?
So in California, a little bit more of the Holy Shift tour with Rob Bell.
Great.
And then back in Belfast to shoot a short film called Making Love.
I'm so excited for you this. I can't wait to both see it and to hear how it's going. I'm so excited.
Me too. I can't wait. And so maybe we'll do a podcast on it once it's all done.
You, as a philosopher, are in the process of having a better film career for sure than me, but also many filmmakers who are in Los Angeles. Like you did a very cool thing with, like, you did the Kickstarter thing. You wrote a script based off of this really cool parable. It's really cool. Do you want to talk about it at all, or are you kind of just like,
well, you know what? I'd love to, but I think we should do that in a full one.
We should. We'll dedicate it.
Yeah.
I
could tell the basic idea.
Please.
Well, just that it's based on a thought experiment by Immanuel Kant, who said, imagine you could sleep with the person of your dreams, but the very next day you'd be hung on the gallows. And he said, what would you do? And of course he says, well, you wouldn't do it. No sensible person would have one night with someone they really desire and then die.
Want to bet?
Well, exactly. That's what Lacan said.
Got to be Lacan to know that.
But he found this very obscure passage in this very boring philosopher, and he said, well, yes, exactly what you're saying. Sometimes you really want what you can't have, and sometimes the gallows makes you want it.
Nice.
So the whole film is premised on this American ex-military guy who worked with the IRA briefly. He fell in love with this French woman who was married to this paramilitary guy. They have a brief affair, but when the paramilitary leader finds out, he says to the American, you never see her again or you're a dead man. So he leaves. But basically the film starts 3 years later when he returns to Belfast, because he is so distraught. He just wants to know whether they can be together or not. He's melancholic. So he arrives back in Belfast and he goes to the hotel that she's in, and he gets to spend 1 hour in that hotel. And the husband knows about it. He says, listen, buy her a drink, tell her about why you're here. But if you sleep with her, you're dead. And if you don't leave by midnight, you're dead. And when you leave, you will never see her again. And so the whole film is about what happens in that hotel room between the hours of 10 o'clock and midnight.
Room service.
A lot of room service, yeah.
They watch a movie. They have a good time. And then part ways.
Yeah. And it's called Making Love because it used to be that the term making love had nothing to do with sex. It was to do with the act of making love. And the person who made love wasn't the two people, but a third. So you would say go out with somebody and have a chaperone. And people think that the role of the chaperone is to stop two people from doing anything untoward. But actually the role of the chaperone was to get the two people to start fantasizing about what they could do if only the third person wasn't there to stop them. So literally the chaperone was making love.
The law of prohibition made the desire.
Generating desire. So the whole movie is based on, it's a philosophical and theological movie about the nature of desire, dressed up as an erotic thriller.
I had a very dumb thing I was going to say to compare that, but I'm going to take a left turn and not say the dumb thing. So that's
wow, this is a first.
Yeah,
take just, note.
I'm like experimenting. Wow, you know, I'm trying to really find my groove in this. That's very cool, man. I'm very excited about that. I'm going to be at Crackers in Indianapolis on April 4th. So if anybody wants to come see stand up, you can do that. My parents told me they surprised me and they said that they're flying to Indianapolis to see me perform, and that gave me it made me tear up. It was a beautiful thing and I'm really excited about it, but then it made me go like, oh crap, I gotta sell some tickets for this thing. So that's how come I'm shoehorning my stuff in there.
There was I can't remember the comedian who said it, but there was a famous joke where this comedian said, when I told my parents that I was going to be a comedian, they laughed at me. They're not laughing now.
Yeah. But isn't it something like, well, now no one's laughing?
Yeah, it was like, it was brilliant. It's so good. It's a classic, one of those really classic good lines. Yeah.
All right. So today we are diving into the worst way to be, the worst ways that you can be. On the heels of doing one on dickish behavior, now we're doing one on how to just be a total train wreck of a human being when it comes to handling your anxieties. So so dive us and push us into the pool, Pete.
Yeah.
What are we doing?
Yeah, and you know what? I love that what we're going to hopefully try and do is every time we do a podcast, if there's a little tiny something in the last podcast that we like, we then look at it in the next podcast. So this is kind of growing out of the how not to be a dick.
Yeah, it'll be fun because then maybe if we do that, we can go back and be like, oh, this came from that, which came from that, and we'll create a nice hereditary
and we thing. Can create a nice little mind map.
Yes, a mind map. An infographic, maybe.
An infographic, that would be beautiful. Well, yeah, what we were going to talk about today is defense mechanisms. What we do to try to defend ourselves against our anxiety and our traumas and our suffering. And Anna Freud is actually one of the key thinkers in really systematizing the different defenses that people use.
And Anna Freud is Freud's,
Freud's daughter. Okay. One of Freud's daughters, yeah. So she became one of the canon of psychoanalysts. Not one that I'm so into, but she has some incredible insights and she's very brilliant.
Well, I'm sure she's trying to gain her father's approval.
Of course, absolutely.
Got you, Anna.
There's your one psychoanalytic joke.
Yep,
It has to get one in every podcast. Yeah. because Freud kind of mentioned a few, one of his the primary defenses is repression, where people put out of their mind any things that are distressful, things that are unpleasant to them or morally horrible, abhorrent to them.
That just reminded me, I have two parking tickets I have to...
Oh yeah, that's a good example of repression. I notice this about you. You get parking tickets all the time, which we have to delve into.
Yeah, man.
And then two, you don't pay them, which we have to also delve into.
I just can't take them seriously.
Completely put out of your mind, because I say to you, I'll say to you, have you paid your ticket? Yeah, and you go, no, I'm going to have to do that today. You literally repress. You put it out of your mind.
Yeah, it immediately goes away.
And then it'll probably come out in some crazy dream.
It might, yeah. Let's see if that happens. It'll be a fun experiment. Yeah,
don't pay them and let's see what happens.
Now I have a reason. Okay, anyway.
Okay. So repression was a key one, and there are a few really key defense mechanisms, but Anna Freud also developed some, you know, secondary ones, and we all have them. Like everybody except for myself,
yes, of course.
Yeah.
Well, you're a Greek god of mental health.
That's right. Exactly. Chiseled.
Yeah.
But have various ways of avoiding a confrontation with our own suffering.
Great.
And some of these defenses are actually very productive, and some of them are very destructive. So that's what we're diving into, the destructive. Yeah.
Ones.
We talked about maybe keeping the really good ones for a different podcast.
It'll be a lighter hearted podcast instead of all these heavy ones that we've been doing.
Of course. Like, of course.
Really bringing people down.
Yeah.
So
we start with the worst ones then.
Yeah. So let's do a game. We're going to do free association.
A drinking game, this should be. So every time someone hears a defense mechanism they've used, they need to take a drink.
Oh my God. Well, that drinking would be a defense mechanism, probably.
Yes, that's right. Like, yeah.
You just double down. Okay, so I'm going to say some words, and then you say the first thing that comes to your mind. So I need you to clear your mind. Mm. Okay, completely clear your mind. Yep. Totally empty.
We're doing free association here.
This is, okay. And also clear your unconscious mind as well. So go ahead and get rid of that, because I know that's
already
easy to
done.
Do.
Yeah.
Oh, already done. Yeah. Did that years ago. Okay, here we go. On three. Mm. One. Two.
Penis.
Okay, you got it. That's okay. Let's write that down. Penis is the worst defense mechanism. that's actually a really good one. Okay, here we go. You ready? Here it is. One. Penis, that's funny. One. Two. Worst defense mechanism.
Acting out.
Love it. Great. Why? Violent?
Yeah, I suppose acting out is a really basic one. It's where, yeah, you use violence and aggression rather than thinking through things using your words, as a parent would say.
Use your words.
Use your words.
Or just
use your words.
A condescending person.
Yes. So, like, that's a basic definition of acting out. There's more interesting ones. But, yeah, where you just throw a dish at someone you don't like rather than saying, I am displeased with your behavior.
Sure.
Yeah.
But saying displeased with your behavior in a way that's also not repressing it, because if you just like go, I am displeased with your behavior.
Oh, yeah.
Because I do that sometimes where I'm like, you're making me unhappy right now. But what really is happening right there is I'm like, everything is bottled up. I don't want to cool you very much. So when it comes to acting out, isn't it weird that it's like a physical thing? Like it's happening in your mind, but the way you deal with it is to like punch a wall or something, or throw a TV or whatever.
And I think it's one of the most basic ones because it's what kids do. Like very small children, you'll see when they have temper tantrum, basically.
Yeah.
It's that they can't express themselves. There's explosions in their body. They don't even know what those explosions are. It could be rage, it could be hunger, it could be tiredness, but you don't even have words to describe those inner feelings. And so those inner feelings, there's no articulation. And so they kind of like, you explode in some physical way.
Yeah. Ooh, sounds horrible.
Yeah. But most people, you know, you learn how to control that or to put that into other defenses. But some people continue to have those problems into adulthood.
I've seen it at times. I definitely grew up in a very non-violent environment, to the point that acting out would probably have been a healthier thing at times to have expressed some kind of physical thing, especially as a kid, because I imagine as a kid you kind of just need to do that.
Yeah.
But as an adult, I've seen it occasionally where I've seen people, you know, hit walls and all that. And it's not something I identify with very much. Like when I see that happen, I'm always kind of like, oh, that person is real mad. But I don't know, you know. That said, I and what do you think about this? So here's my thing with the whole acting out thing.
Mm-hmm.
You get real stressed out and you get real upset and you are like, oh, I want to punch something. And then sometimes what you do, as an alternative, is you can go and you can like work out, but you're still using your physical body to like, you know, you're still kind of acting out. How is that different than acting out?
And this is the funny thing, right? All of us have this, you know, different sufferings that we're having to cope with. And it's like this water that is flowing, and our riverbeds in our lives or our defense mechanisms push that water in various ways. And so in a sense, there's no difference between what you're describing of going and working out and punching a wall, except that the working out is turning the aggression into something that's actually useful and positive. So you're actually doing something healthy. Whereas the acting out, you're actually hurting your fist if you're punching a wall.
Oh, I guess that makes sense. The whole idea of these being healthy or unhealthy is that the result is healthy or unhealthy.
Yeah, yeah.
So I probably, if I had thought about that for 2 seconds longer, probably could have figured that one out on my own, but, you know.
Yeah, because like what you're doing by working out, you are, you know, unless it's obsessive working out, you know, 5 hours a day and there's something not good about that.
That becomes like self-flagellation and like punishing yourself all the time.
Yeah, or just, yes, there's something going on there. But if you're just kind of like taking that suffering and you're putting it into a good workout, you're turning that into something useful. You're sublimating it. That's what's called sublimation. Sublimation is actually the highest defense mechanism.
Ah, one day. I walked out of the our home today. And there was like, you know, how they had like somebody just put furniture out there.
Oh, yeah, I know. Ridiculous.
And then it infuriated me. And normally that stuff doesn't get to me, but it just really upset me because it's just an entire couch.
Yeah.
And they and so I left a note or emailed the people, the apartment complex, and they took care of it. And then the people
put more stuff, put stuff out there. I know.
And I'm
I know.
Well, I didn't. I'm like, how? Clearly they now think that that's just what you do, but they don't know that it's me in here getting enraged, sending emails.
Yeah.
I got a heat turning on, so we're going to turn that off. Yeah. Or AC. I don't know why I turned the AC on last night. Anyway, but yeah, so then I go down to the gym and I walk in and then somebody had like left the weights like off of the rack or whatever. And something in me was just like out loud. I said, well, I won't say what I said, but I muttered a bad word under my breath, and I think I remember seeing the guy, and I remember like I do like my little, you know, elliptical thing beforehand, and I was just like, when I get off this elliptical, I'm gonna make it a point to put those weights up, and I'm not gonna say anything, but I'm definitely gonna make some eye contact, and I'm definitely gonna be like that guy who's like, look at me putting your thing away, you're cleaning up after you, but he left, and then I was just like, well, I'm still going to clean it up, but now it's not going to feel as good. And I'm not going to be doing it for any reason other than just to like feel a little bit more weirdly organized and OCD about it. But anyway, I don't know.
But you know, that's a more positive way of dealing with, something that annoys you as well, but it's assertiveness where you are able to express to the person. Now, obviously you weren't because the guy left.
Oh, but man, if I had he would have gotten. I mean, he was about 5 times bigger than me and just a big, big man. But I would have said, I mean, is it assertive? It's more passive aggressive?
Well, no, I mean, it depends. Passive aggressive is maybe, but as long as you're communicating your feelings, that's generally healthier, except sometimes you can't. Like, you can't communicate your feelings to your boss, for example, without maybe getting fired.
Oh, yeah, that's such a good point. Yeah, you're
right. So, you know, but what happens then is this is another defense mechanism, is displacement. Often, if you are angry at someone, but they're like bigger than you are, or they're your boss, what you do often is you then take that anger and you direct it at somebody else. So you go home when you take it out on your partner or your dog. Or if you've got a baby, you can't be angry that your baby's kept you up all night because your child is weak. But what you might do is take out your annoyance again on your partner, your mum or your dad. And that's a very common defense mechanism where we displace our aggression.
That makes sense. That's very, it seems like a way you'd have to do in order to live a life. It's kind of the same with acting out where it's like most people, because it's like so bad and then because it's so rare, it's like, of course it's rare because if you want to have any friends or family, you're probably not going to be punching a lot of people in general. Yeah. It also just seems like such a weird thing when you see like aggro dudes who are just like, they're already like a big dude who's angry just reminds me of like a toddler. There is something very childlike about a big angry guy. You always want the big guy, the example I always think of is The Rock, who's just like the nicest, at least appears to be the nicest, coolest, like most, you know, chill dude, but he's giant and you know he's this, you know, but imagine if he was just like a jerk and he was angry all the time. For one, it'd be terrifying. Two, it's like there's something like on a different level than just whatever, it's like disconcerting. It's like, oh, this is like not a healthy person.
Well that's a good example of reaction formation, is where say someone is feeling very weak inside, they may take up bodybuilding. Reaction formation is where you do the opposite of what you are, you feel. So you might, if you're full of doubt and unknowing, you might kind of get really super interested in, if you're religious, apologetics. So apologetics is not, which is just defense of your position. But whenever you see someone into apologetics, you think, oh, they're very certain. And sometimes they might be, but if they're really into it, it often is actually because they're full of doubt. And they're full of doubt, which means that they express certainty. So sometimes you see if someone's excessively like showing off how strong they are or how much sex they're having or sexual prowess they have, sometimes that is a reaction formation to them feeling impotent, feeling weak, feeling not in control. Just like a man who beats his wife is often a sign not that they're strong, but that they're incredibly weak. Like it's an incredible weakness and patheticness to that's acting out partly, but you know, there's an incredible weakness to that acting out. It looks like strength, but it's actually profound weakness.
So fun, man.
So have you got a favorite bad defense mechanism that comes to mind for you?
My go-to is for sure, I think, reaction formation.
Oh yeah.
For one, it's fun to say.
Yeah.
But it's even more fun to do, Pete. It's even more. It's an enjoyable way to live your life. I don't mean in the sense of like, you know, I was going to make a joke about sexual prowess, but I couldn't think of anything because I'm also trying to think of an example of when I do the reaction formation thing. I have a thing I think that happens where I'll see somebody from a life who has a life that is so different from mine, but I grew up with them or we're the same age or something like that, or we have a history together. And I see the choices that they're making and I get very kind of like, oh, I could never, you know, live like that. Like, oh, I could never, you know, this person with their house and their kids and their, like, you know, husband or wife who's had the same job for 15 years, even though they're like 32. And I'm just like, ha, 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 ha. Like, how could you do that? And then I know on some level that I would love to have a job that's like, I mean, that's thank God with like the Valley Folk thing, but the whole, you know, on a personal front for all of us, a goal was to just have some level of stability because we don't have that in this industry, and I know that I want it. And so when I see people who have it, a part of me is like, I could never.
Yes, it's so funny because like when you go like, oh, I would hate, like for example, look at that person with all that money and do it, like that's so embarrassing, and look at the car they're driving and look at all of that, and you get so angry with it that there's part of it starts to look like if someone turned around and said, well, do you want that money in that car? You'd be like, yes, please.
Yep.
So that's it. It's like, otherwise you'd be indifferent. You're indifferent about something, it shows that you're not interested. But when we hate something, like look at those married people. They're just married with their kids and their stable job. I love that too. Oh
my God. Dude, that's my favorite when somebody's like, I could never be married to the same person, like sex with the same person forever. No way. Which on one level, it's like, that's a very legitimate conversation you can have about how like sustainable that kind of thing is. But on the other hand, you also get the people where I'm like, I think you do want to be married. Like, I think you do want a person that you can have forever that's just yours and you're just theirs. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. So it's, you just never know. It's the same. It's like different conversations around the same thing, depending on what you're talking about. But yeah, I that's a big thing in the South. You have to like, at least in my upbringing, there's the game you play where you say, you know, I don't want that big thing. I would never want that. I want the, you know, tiny thing, the, you know, just whatever, the whatever. And then you're like, oh, no, not really. Yeah. Like, I would love all that stuff. I mean, I don't have exactly what they have, but I would enjoy, you know, bukus of money just to see what it's like for a little while. Yeah. I don't think there's anything.
And it's when you're not aware of it in yourself. That's the funny thing. That's the great thing about knowing these defenses is you can kind of go, oh, maybe I really am annoyed at that because there's something I would like in that. Another interesting thing about reaction formation is
RF
from now on abbreviated
just takes too long to say.
You know, if you look at, say, a lot of couples get married at the very point when it looks like everything is a disaster in their relationship, or have a kid. This is quite a common thing. So a lot of people get married because they want to and have kids because they want to, but this weird phenomenon when the relationship looks at its worst, the people get married. And sometimes it seems like they're so not wanting to look at the trauma and the difficulties and the sufferings in their relationship that there's a reaction formation. They kind of go to the opposite extreme. So because marriage, of course, is a very extreme thing for people to do, even if they really are into each other, but a very extreme thing if you're not really into each other. Right. So reaction formation is a good one to see, because you see it all the time in people doing like very extreme behaviors that, you know, instead of maybe, oh, why don't you go to counseling, or why don't you take a break for a few weeks or something like that? You go, no, whoa, no, what you've done is you've decided to have a child.
No.
Yeah. And it can get you into a lot of trouble.
Yeah, I can relate to that. I think I want to make two disclaimers on this real fast.
Yes.
The first disclaimer is that when we are speaking about this, because we're kind of doing the thing I think that we feel compelled to do, or that anybody feels compelled to do, especially nowadays, is like speak in a way that you kind of dot every I and cross every T. So I just want to put a blanket statement out there that at no point in this are we saying that getting married is always a defense or that knowing apologetics means that you're, you know, don't believe it. But like, you know, I just want to make it clear, because
that's a good point to make, because these are examples, but you can get married for great reasons. Most people do, actually.
Yeah.
Or you can stay single for terrible reasons.
Right. Yeah, yeah. So it's all different, and it's all like, and I think it speaks to the kind of truth of the defense mechanisms, is like, you just know, like, and I think, you know, you can sense it in other people, or you can at least assume or you know, glean or whatever, but like, you know, it's not to say, it's not about the action so much as it is the motivation.
Yeah.
This other disclaimer I wanted to make is that none of these are boxes that people live in solely, and that there is overlap in them, because that's something that we've talked about, and I don't want to come off like the expert here, but I would love to hear more of your thoughts there.
No, that's also a very good one. Like, I think there's like two or three, I mean, the main one is actually repression. They're like incredibly important defenses that actually have a lot of insight, and you can use them in philosophy, but a lot of these are more kind of like, they're less technical and precise. Yeah. And you know, there's any number of defenses. There's probably anywhere between, you know, 10 and 20 that we could list out. But as you say, these are just ways of grouping together certain behaviors. We're like almost, if you think of it like a pot that's boiling on a stove, and the water creates steam, and there's a lid on the pot. The steam has to escape somewhere, and each place it escapes is kind of like a defense. And there's kind of any number of places it could escape from, various areas in the lid of the pot. That's kind of it, is that the pressure that we have that comes from the traumas that happen to us in life and the trauma of life itself, they have to release in certain ways, and the ways they release are kind of what we call defenses.
Or think of it like this.
Uh-huh.
Your kidneys need water.
Uh-huh.
Because of how your body works. And if you drink alcohol, then there's a thing called anti-diuretic hormone that has the same shape as the water, and it goes into your kidneys, which is why when you drink a lot, you get dehydrated easily, because your body literally can't absorb the water. So what's happening is your defense mechanisms are like the ADH plugging up the holes in your kidneys, so that the water of the agony that you experience doesn't get absorbed into your kidneys, because who would want that to happen? And so the point is, you should drink more.
Yes, that is the point of that analogy. Okay. Alcohol is good.
Yeah, I felt like you were going off on some weird tangent there.
Yeah, let's get it back to the real thing.
Glad I brought it back.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, okay, so cool. I like all that. It's kind of like, you know, if you have a five love languages, you know, maybe you like massages and getting gifts.
Yeah. You know, please, at least every other podcast, try to get the five love languages in. That would be good.
You know why? Because it's just a placeholder for like, you know what the new one is? It's just the Hogwarts sorting hat. Have you done that one?
No, I don't know. Never heard of it.
Did you read Harry Potter?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, you should.
Because I'm an adult.
Okay. Yeah. See, and you were worried we weren't gonna say something controversial in this episode. That is, you should read those books.
I should.
They're absolutely incredible.
Oh, here, a good example of your first caveat. Oh no, do you want to explain the?
Nope.
No.
I got nothing.
Because a good example of your first caveat is denial as a defense. It's one that we all knew, because it's the whole typical alcoholic is the one who, you know, are you an alcoholic? And the alcoholic says, no, I'm not. And it's denial. Now, what people will then say is, well, hold on a second. If you're not an alcoholic and you're asked, you're going to say no as well. And then if the person says, okay, well, that must mean you're an alcoholic, and you go, no, I'm definitely not an alcoholic, you're like, oh, well, you're denying it so much, you must be.
Yeah.
But actually the difference is that in denial, you deny something that you're not even asked to deny. So someone might be at a party and go, oh, you know what, we're drinking a lot here, I'll go down and buy a few more bottles of wine in the off license. I'm not an alcoholic or anything. And you're like, well, nobody asked you if you were.
Yeah.
Right? So you're denying something without being asked it. And so that's a difference of going like, you know, you're not an alcoholic, or you keep telling everybody you're not an alcoholic.
I feel like that also, like in today's lingo, that would be like somebody walking out of the party and saying something like, well, we're drinking a lot, I'm going to go get some more bottles because I'm such an alcoholic. And then of a sudden you're like, why is that person making that weird sarcastic joke about...
Oh, that's clear. Yeah, that's a version of denial.
Yeah, because you're, like, you're using a sarcasm to the premises that you're not that.
Yes.
So therefore, it's fine. You can always,
very good. I mean, it's the difference between, you know, someone who doesn't eat anything and an anorexic who eats nothingness. Again, it's a difference of like, so both eat nothing, but whereas the first is, I'm not eating anything.
Yeah.
The other, in a sense, is making a nothing into something. And in denial, it's like the difference between someone who's like, no, I'm not an alcoholic, to someone who's like, no, I'm not an alcoholic every 10 minutes, you know, is always telling you that they're not. Yeah. While shaking. So yeah,
man, what a crazy world. Yeah, denial, I feel like, is definitely the go-to, and everybody experiences it. I mean, I feel like all of these, I can hear and just know that I'm, you know, I fall back on them sometimes.
Oh, you know, one of my favorites, one of my absolute favorites. You do? Which one?
Oh, I thought you were pointing at me, so I didn't know if you meant that you were gonna list a defense mechanism that I that you've noticed. I was like, okay, great, here we go.
Yeah.
But no, what's yeah?
This is a good one because I think it's very funny. It's projection. Where you project out your own feelings that you can't, and thoughts that you don't want to accept, so you put them onto somebody else. So for example, you know, in analysis, somebody might say, like, I know you think I'm dreaming about my mother, but I'm not. And you're like, oh my goodness. Or, you know, the last thing I'm thinking about is seeing my ex-girlfriend. You know, you think I want to see her, but that's the last thing on my mind. So what you're going is, weirdly, you're like, it's obviously not the last thing on your mind because you're saying it.
Yep.
But you're not saying I'm thinking it, you're saying you're thinking it.
Yeah.
You know, or people who say, oh, in society thinks this. Whenever, and sometimes, you know, you can make generalizations, but sometimes it's like a person is actually putting out into society feelings and thoughts that they have that they think are awful and terrible and so have repressed. And the only way they come to the surface is through being put into somebody else's mouth.
I feel like paranoia is a version of that, where you're imagining the people around you to have a negative or kind of like malicious intent, when in actuality it's just on the inside you're feeling that way about yourself.
Oh yeah, that's true. Yeah, the paranoid person, it says, for example, all dentists are out to get us, and then you say, well you know,
yeah,
here are very friendly dentists, and they go, well, they're just being friendly so they can kind of get us.
Yeah, they're being friendly, and then they're gonna stick something in your mouth that's gonna hurt really bad.
Yeah,
dude, I'm getting dental insurance next month, humble brag, and
bourgeois bastard.
Yeah, exactly. And I will say,
lordy, you know, be drinking champagne,
yeah,
next.
You know, sifting it through my clean teeth. But yeah, I was like, we were talking about something because the health insurance stuff, and I was like, I'm just excited to go to the dentist. And then I didn't know that there was no plan to have like dental. And then they were like, well, after you said that, we had, and I was like, sweet, I get dental.
So, I don't know. How do you go to the dentist in America?
I don't know. I can't wait to find out. It's been a very long time. I used to have a different life where somebody made all those decisions for me and I would just show up. So now I have to be a big boy and learn myself, which is.
Because I don't have dental. I don't think back home you get all that for free. Well, it's tax or whatever. But I hear, I was like, I don't know what you do.
Yeah.
What if I get a toothache? I don't know what to do.
Well, here in America, we like to pay for our
teeth
cleaning.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. So, but it's speaking of society and like generalizations.
Ooh.
About society.
Yeah.
These are fun to talk about. They're fun to think about. I had thought about the projection thing.
Yeah.
I did a stand-up set a while back where I did defense mechanisms, and it was all about my divorce. And I tried to take 15 defense mechanisms. You sent me the list.
Oh yeah.
So I blame you. And and I went through, and that got me in a lot of hot water because sometimes people didn't know that I was making jokes about, like, it was,
yes,
each one was in some way self-deprecating, but it, yes, it sounded, because the way that defense mechanisms work is that you take your self-deprecation and you either project it or whatever.
So yeah, so if you make a joke about reaction formation, you come across like, oh my goodness, you're being a total asshole, right. But the point is, you're doing that
to express,
yeah. But if someone doesn't know the defense, they're like, oh my goodness,
right, yeah. And so then at the end I was like, okay, so this joke was this, just was that, this was projection, this was that, and it was a fun thing, but it was a difficult, some of those jokes I'm still saying, by the way.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, yeah. I think there's a couple that I'm still working with, but anyway, the only reason I thought about that was because I heard projection and we were talking about it the other day. But anyway, on a societal level, we have the individual. So we have this individual who's a hot mess. Let's call her Juniper. Mm-hmm. And Juniper, she's full of the worst attributes, she's full of the most unhealthy defense mechanisms. So when she gets upset, when she feels fearful, she assumes everyone around her is out to get her. So she has a reaction formation where she feels inwardly weak, she becomes violent. So if she sees a stranger, she starts beating the stranger up.
So acting out, yeah.
So she acts out. And then she's throwing a temper tantrum, she starts crying, and she starts demanding that the people around her, like, make her food and make her bed and do everything because she's a child and she doesn't know how to do it. So she's regressing
regression.
Well.
We didn't even touch on regression.
Didn't even touch on regression.
Yeah, regression just very quickly is where you go back to childlike activities, maybe from bedwetting to clinging to your partner,
yeah,
to unconsciously getting your partner to act like a mother or father figure to you, or regressing to childlike games.
Yeah. So yeah. Juniper's all about that.
Yeah.
And she's doing that and she's beating people up. She's screaming at people. And when you're like, hey, Juniper, you're like not right in the head, she's like, no, I'm totally right in the head. I'm perfect and whatever. So she's denying everything as well. So generally speaking, Juniper is what we wouldn't call a pleasant individual. Mm-hmm. So if you take Juniper and then you clone her a billion times and then you make a society out of her, how do these defense mechanisms play out on a societal level? What I just said, that
I don't, did that question make any sense?
No, there's no connection. There was no connection between the final statement, because I realized, I was like, well, there's no, that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
But the segue that I'm making is we've covered the individual who has the unhealthiest traits.
Yeah.
That seems terrible. And so now let's talk about the society, yes, and what happens when societies as a whole, as giant organisms of single cell dummies, yes, kind of groupthink themselves into defense mechanisms.
Very nice. Yeah. Wow. You got from Juniper.
But yeah, no, I did a set on defense mechanisms and I did, and I just keep going a loop. Yeah.
No, this, you're saying the stuff that makes me most, this is where I get excited about this topic, is not so much defenses in terms of individuals. That's interesting. And there's a good book called Why Do I Do That? I can't remember the author's name off the top of my head, but you'll find it. Why Do I Do That?
Gary Chapman.
Which lists numerous, what's that?
I said the author of The Five Love Languages.
Oh, that's great. It goes through various defenses and it's very interesting to read and to identify yourself. But actually, where it becomes really interesting, I think, is when we apply these to society and go, oh, societies and families and communities have defense mechanisms as well.
Yeah, so let's define like a society. What do you mean by society? Do you mean like America? Or do you mean like Los Angeles for sure? Or Northern Ireland, like just any of them, any kind of geographic location?
Yeah, I would say like any collective of people, whether it's a family, whether it's a church or a country. I mean, you can cut it up in numerous ways.
Great.
But if you can draw a circle around a group, you can sometimes identify common defenses that actually hint at common trauma. So, you know, society, like there's that phrase, a society that doesn't know its history is condemned to repeat it, mm-hmm, which is true for individuals as well. Individuals who don't know their past repeat it. But that, you know, a community with a shared trauma that they're not looking at will often express various ways of avoiding the confrontation. So, for example, splitting. So whenever a splitting is where you make goodies and baddies in your world, you break up with someone and you're like, oh, they're evil and terrible and bad, and
like
I'm innocent.
Comic book living.
Yeah, absolutely. You see it in lots of comics. That's a kind of regression as well. But you create a very simple world of goodies and baddies. And these things aren't good or bad in themselves. The reason why someone does that is because they're facing a deep suffering and they want to avoid a full confrontation with it. The problem happens if they keep the defense. Eventually, you know, they can't move on, they can't have another relationship, they remain bitter.
Yeah.
There has to be a point where the defense mechanism lowers enough that that novelty and change can happen and new relationship can develop. But some societies split as well, where you'll see communities going, we're innocent and pure and good, and those people out there are bad and awful, and we're not interconnected in any way. So that's a community-wide defense mechanism.
Which isn't to say, like, the false equivalence thing of, like, every time people are equally bad.
Yes, no, not at all. Just in relationships, sometimes it is the vast majority one person's fault.
Yeah. So I was just thinking in terms of, like, the political climate that we're currently in, and not that I want to go down that path in any way, but the conservative, liberal, constant battling that's happening right now, which is just at, like, it seems to me to be at, like, a fever pitch, is so, like, very, it seems like splitting. It seems like on both sides, it seems like that person is the evil person and we're the good people. And it's just like, but then at the same time, you get the people who are like, no, come on. It's like, they're bad and they're good and you're bad and I'm good. And then it's like, yeah, but one side probably does suck worse than the other side, but you can't throw all of these babies out with the bathwater because babies hate when you do that.
Yeah. And here's the issue with splitting. So take the moral stuff out of it. You're right. Cause take all of that out and just go, okay, what's the main issue with splitting? Cause actually we split for a reason. The main issue.
This is fun. Instead of going issue, oh, I love this. Yeah.
Yeah. The main issue is that, so take war. War is a great example of splitting. When you're at war with another country, you go, they're the evil ones and we're the goodies. And you have a battle. But the problem with war is there's no conflict. Comedian from Ireland, Dylan Moran, said, war is not conflict, it's the inability to have conflict.
Hilarious.
Because you want to destroy the other person. The only way that splitting can resolve is if you destroy utterly the enemy. And the problem
decimate.
And the problem there is, there's a number of problems. One of the problems is that no creative solutions can arise, no forward momentum, no novelty. So in Northern Ireland, the conflict between Republicans and Loyalists eventually got so bad that everybody basically said, we have got to stop splitting. We have got to enter into conflict, i.e. we've got to sit down and argue. So the what you brought up is the idea, we're not saying that everyone's equally good or bad. What we're saying is that what splitting is the avoidance of conflict. You do want to argue with the other, you want to kill them.
Yeah.
You want to decimate them. And actually the next step is to go, no, I want to have conflict with the other person. Not we're equally good and equally bad, but I am prepared to actually fight with you. To go back and forth, to argue, to sit in a room, and actually, weirdly, to go, we will sit and argue for the next year. So that's politics.
And it does take, though, because I guess this goes back to treating it as two different societies, because if it's two societies that are warring it out, if we're like using the analogy, like if it was a person and they had defense mechanisms, it would take both sides to do that, right? Like it would take an understanding, because if you're dealing, just in everyday life, if you're dealing with somebody who's like, you know, they're Juniper, and you're Pete, then like you're not going to be able to go to Juniper and be like, let's lay down our defenses for a moment and like let's talk this through. So I mean, what do you do in that scenario?
Absolutely. I mean, often, and here's the sad thing, AA talks about this, but sometimes the opening for novelty and for conflict only arises when things are so bad that both sides in different ways go, we're all screwed. And that's kind of sad in a way, because it's basically hitting bottom of the barrel.
Yeah.
For example, in Northern Ireland, you know, we disbanded the entire police force because we felt it was overly militarized and sectarian. We made incredible.
You disbanded the police force?
Yeah.
What does that mean? You're like, all right, you're done?
Yeah, done. And then kind of basically formed a new police force.
Wow. Yeah. Crazy.
So moved from the RUC to the PSNI.
What did all the RUC people do?
Most of them were retired. And were given early retirement. I mean, they basically restructured the entire police force.
Wow, crazy.
And some people obviously kept their jobs, but it wasn't piecemeal. It wasn't just changing the name. It was like a fundamental restructuring.
Cleaning house kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was because they became too powerful kind of thing?
Well, or just it was seen as a militarized police force and a sectarian police force. And as part of the peace process, it was like, we're entering a time of peace, and so we need a police force that is less militarized and reflects all sides of the community.
Wow. I mean, that's really, it seems beautiful.
Oh yeah, it was incredible. I mean, the peace process called the Good Friday Agreement, because it was made on Good Friday in 1998, is an incredible document, and it's an incredible story, and someday we should do a podcast on that. But it was partly because we had a 30-year war.
It's too long.
Yeah, it was too long. 30 years 25, too long. 25,
cut it out.
Yeah, 25, yeah. Yeah. And because our population was so small, basically it a huge percentage of the population were killed and maimed in the war. So everybody basically was like, oh my goodness, we do not want another 30 years of this. So it wasn't saying, oh, we're all the same. It was basically going, yeah, we are angry with the other side, but we're willing to sit in a room and fight and argue and try to write something down and try to find agreement.
What a beautiful, feels like a very powerful move, but also one that would just be very painful.
I mean, this is the one rule of psychoanalysis, which I've got a friend, he's an analyst, and he says, the one rule is, you know, the person comes in and they shout, say, at the analyst, they say, I hate you, you're terrible, you're despicable, you just care about money, you're destroying me, you're this, that, and the other thing. You fight and they shout and they do all of that. And then they go, I'll see you next Wednesday, same time, same place. The only commitment is to keep coming back. And that's like an Irish pub, is you can go in, you fight, you argue, you start off saying, oh, you're great, how's it going, Elliot? Two drinks in, you're like, Elliot, you're the most amazing person ever. If I have kids, I want you to have them because you're so amazing. I love you. And then two more drinks in, you're like, I hate you, I despise you, I never want to see you again.
That sounds like an unstable person.
Yeah, yeah. No, and then, but then at midnight, you're like, see you tomorrow night, yeah, see you tomorrow night, right? So that's it, the commitment is like, we are going to go through the good times and the bad times together.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, I remember being in high school when when 9/11 happened and the war on terror became a thing. And I remember, you know, thinking like, this isn't that difficult of a scenario. Like, there's bad people. We're going to go get the bad people. We're going to kill the bad people. and then like, you know, you kind of grow and worry and change and see what happens. And it's like, if you think of a terrorist, like, or terrorism, and it's hard to imagine conquering terrorism. Like, yeah. how do you conquer something that is like that and is always breaking off and growing on its own? And it's like this weird kind of cancer. So it's like, I guess my thing with that, like, on a societal level, is like, how do you handle that without just going like, okay, we're out, you know? And I don't know. I truly don't know what the
terrorism is. I mean, terrorism, in a sense, is a terrorist is a person who is attempting to create splitting. So one of the goals of terrorist activity is to get away from conflict, political engagement, and create a kind of a radical split, a war where ultimately you're going to get people to have to take sides and to destroy your enemy.
Which is exactly what both sides, not to in any way to do a false equivalent thing, but I mean, wouldn't that be like any propaganda, any kind of thing like that? That's what you're doing in war.
Yeah,
right?
Well, funnily enough, a lot of propaganda, all these defense mechanisms are fantastic to know because you'll see them used in propaganda.
Yeah, like, I mean, please keep talking.
Yeah, all of them are useful because in different ways you go, oh, that's how I'm trying to be manipulated. This is how they want me to feel.
Yeah.
Because
if I don't feel this way, it'll force me to look at something that they don't want me to look at. And if I look at it, then I'm like, oh man, that's so crazy. What a world.
Yeah. So yeah, so it's what we need in the world is are people who are willing to kind of like try to stand against, kind of try to help reveal what, because defense mechanisms always hide legitimate suffering.
Yeah.
They always cover over their ways of handling real conflict, real suffering, real trauma. Some, like acting out, are the worst ways of coping with the trauma. Some things like intellectualization or slightly better ways of dealing with trauma.
That's my other, my go-to, yeah.
Yeah.
At least I think it is. Maybe it's not. Maybe it is. Maybe it's not. Maybe it is. Maybe it's not. I'm glad you're hitting that point again, because you mentioned it earlier when we were first talking about the societal stuff and like removing the morality taking the morality out of it and then looking at just like, excuse me, the fact that something is under there. And I just think that knowledge is like so cool. Like, not cool is obviously a very, like, the wrong word, but if you look at the person acting out or like punching a wall, mm-hmm. and you're like, that's not a good one, that's a bad defense mechanism, yeah. because look at them, they're punching a wall. It's like, well, punching a wall isn't healthy, but even if you just remove the health or the goodness or the badness, if you look at a conflict, if you look at war, and you take away all of the complicated political stuff, and you just go, something is going on that's legitimate, yes. under here, it, like, I think it makes it such a world of difference. And can you allow people to have conversations with either people about politics or people about people that aren't so charged and one-sided,
yeah.
you know?
Absolutely. A very common thing I've seen on YouTube and stuff is where people will laugh at extreme positions on, say, the left and the right. Okay, so you'll find the people who seem to be saying crazy things and kind of have a laugh. But the much harder thing to do is to go, well, okay, maybe they're distorting, displacing, and condensing arguments. So distorting an argument, they're thinking that, you know, they're basically putting their anger into something silly.
Yeah.
But you start to go, okay, hold on, but maybe there is a legitimate problem. Like, maybe there is mental health issues in society that aren't being addressed. Maybe there's economic disparity or unemployment issues or trauma to do with people coming back from war, whatever it is. So there's real issues in society. And these people who, instead of writing them off because we're laughing at their defense mechanisms, maybe crude defense mechanisms, going, well, maybe these people who believe something very different to me, there's a legitimate trauma yeah. and problem in society that we have to address.
Yeah, it's definitely not as easy to write a joke on that. As, you know, like it's very easy to write a joke about whether it's the college student, yeah. you know, with the safe space. Like, even though, like, I never really see or hear about those in real life, I only hear yeah. them talked about, but I'm also not in college, so maybe they're there. But yeah, it's like you look at that and it's very easy to be like, oh, that person's just X, Y, and Z. And then you're like, oh, well, that person is actually
yeah.
manifesting stuff. Maybe it is that, maybe yeah. it's not that, but something legitimate is going on
there. They can't, you know, there's no jobs out there. Maybe there's no ability to buy houses. Maybe
hated them. I mean,
yeah. And at a societal level, you know, you can laugh at a puppy room or something like that. But
a puppy room?
Well, yeah. I mean, I've heard, I would love this if this was true. I doubt it is true, but that some colleges have puppy rooms where you can go and there's puppies.
Oh, really?
To kind of whatever.
And you would find this funny? Because to me, it seems like a great idea.
Well, no, I would. If I had enough money, we would have a puppy room.
We'd be enrolled in college and we would be in the puppy room.
We'd have a puppy room.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I'd make your room into a puppy room.
Please.
So, but the truth is that I think that actually is an evidence of a real suffering, of like a deep, of something real right. that's a problem in our society. And it takes a lot of work to find out what it is. That's what politics is. Good politics is trying to work out the legitimate sufferings that need to be addressed.
Yeah, and even if you don't go through the work, even the process of, even the just granting someone a little bit of grace and being like, yeah, there's something going on there, I think is a nicer way to go about your life than just being like, this freaking jerk, yeah. this moron, this guy who just loves his guns or whatever, yeah. like whatever yeah. issue you want. It's like, no, yeah. something is valid there yeah. that person's talking about.
And if that was effective, like if ridicule was an effective way of moving society forward, you would see it in therapy. Your therapist would, whenever someone says something kind of silly in therapy, would go, you're just an idiot, come on, pull up your pants.
So they're not supposed to do that? Not,
yeah, apart from your therapist. Yeah,
I've he does occasionally that. Go, come on.
But
then I'm
like, yeah. But like, you know, but the reason what they do instead is the therapist, it takes on all of the aggression, all of the craziness, all of the accusations, takes it all on and remains a non-anxious presence, and then attempts to help the other person, and to explore what's the suffering that is being hidden in that manifestation.
Good stuff.
So in the same way, we need to do the same with society. And, you know, it's a difficult thing to do, but
yeah,
it's important difficult. Work.
Love it. And that's, that I guess concludes our talk on the worst Juniper-esque, I don't know why I went with Juniper. I do kind of like that name though, or whatever. That, is that flower? Is Juniper a flower?
Juniper was a nice name actually. For
yeah.
This one.
You're pleasant. Yeah. It's maybe it's, yeah. Anyway, what it would be your takeaway this particular episode, Dr. Rollins?
Yeah. So I guess my takeaway would be we all have defenses, because here's the thing, if you don't have defense mechanisms, that something even worse would happen. Like if someone, for example, thinks there's a murderer in their cupboard all the time at night, that seems bad. But actually, you know, that's covering over something even more difficult.
Right.
So defense mechanisms aren't good or bad in themselves, but they can become bad whenever we keep them up. Like
yeah.
These fortresses around our ego. So it's good to know what are my go-to defenses? And also to go, and how can I maybe lower them a little? Just like the splitting example. It's fine to split for a bit. That's a way to avoid all the suffering. But at some point, you're going to have to maybe go, maybe it was a wee bit more complicated. Maybe it wasn't all their fault. And maybe I have to, you know, somehow kind of like face up to the fact that I was very emotionally withdrawn, or I was never around or whatever. And as you lower your defense a little bit, novelty and healing can kind of come in. So I would say maybe the takeaway for me is to try to kind of like think about what, when you're under stress, what are the defense mechanisms you use and what are they covering over, and how can you maybe begin to glimpse what they're covering over and bring them to light.
Beautiful. Well said. I'm gonna try to say something that's not gonna be near. I should go first from now on because it's so much better when we end on yours than when we end on mine.
Are you gonna talk about the five love languages?
So I want to talk about acts of service and what they're covering over. To maybe do a slight variation on what you're saying, there's definitely the thing where it's like covering over something, but I tend to think that these defense mechanisms that we have, even the quote unquote crappy ones, have like your best interest in mind, because
yes.
they are protecting
yes.
you, you know, like if you think of them as these little sort of ugly rodents that are trying to like, they have their little things and trying to protect you from whatever the big bad monsters that you don't want to face. So it's like,
that is an incredible image.
Adorable dumb rodents with little
yeah.
swords.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was cute. And so if you take those defense mechanisms and you can, like you're saying, break it down a little bit, maybe you can start incorporating new defense mechanisms.
Yeah.
And it's like, I know in my personal life that certain defense mechanisms I have, whether it's intellectualization or whatever, jokey stuff, sublimation, whatever you want to call it, reaction formation, I know those can actually work to my benefit in
yeah.
some way at times. So it's like, you know, if it's working out or if it's taking all these anxieties and allowing them to manifest in a way that positively affects my life, then I think that's a better way to live.
Yes, absolutely. Beautifully said.
Great. Anything else you want to say?
No, that's great, except maybe we'll do a podcast then that looks more at the really positive defenses.
Great. Love it. That'll be very fun. I'm excited about that. That'll be because that way I can play the game of like,
yeah, that's me or that's not me.
That's it. That's why. Okay. Bye, everybody.
Bye.